One of the greatest challenges we're seeing in our country is the struggle with opioid addiction, and even sadly, many deaths and people, our loved ones, people close to us, dying of overdoses and fentanyl, and just so much hurt around opioid pandemic and epidemic, and lots of stuff going on around that. And so what is Celebrate Recovery doing to open the dialogue around this issue, and what does that look like for me to get involved if I want to be involved in this process to help reach more people? Hopefully the vision in every church across America, maybe across the globe, to help us understand this important topic so that we can, as we say often, keep them alive until they want to live. Today we're talking about opioids and what that looks like in Celebrate Recovery. Welcome to Celebrate Recovery Official, a podcast that shares life change stories, courage, hope, and leadership wisdom, all centered around the Celebrate Recovery principles based on the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5, where Jesus helps us to practically learn how to live a blessed life in spite of our circumstances as we face our hurts, our hang-ups, those nasty core beliefs that we may have adopted along the journey in our life, to deal with those nasty habits that get us stuck that ultimately create a disconnection between us and God and the others that are close to us. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ. I struggle with drugs and alcohol and perfectionism. My name is Rodney. I'm the Global Field Director with Celebrate Recovery, and it's so good to be here with you today. I'm excited to have our guest. Lou is one of our... Man, he's just a warrior in the Celebrate Recovery arena. There's a long list here, but I want you to just get a picture of what this man does for the kingdom through Celebrate Recovery. He's the men's ministry leader at Clarksburg Baptist Church in West Virginia. He's also serves as a board member of Healthy Harrison. That really fights against opioid addiction. And he's also a team lead for Celebrate Recovery to help shepherd some of our volunteer state reps there in the Northeast. And he also serves as the opioid ambassador for the Northeast. That's a lot, Lou. Glad to have you here, man.
It's great to be here, and I'm certainly honored to be able to do all those things. But my CR introduction is, I'm Lou, I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I celebrate recovery from opiate addiction, but continue to struggle with PTSD and grief.
Yeah, so glad you're here, Lou. Thanks for making time. I know this is going to be a blessed time for our listeners. And you know, the goal of this is we want to kind of just bring exposure to this. Obviously, there's many things in our broken world we could be talking about. This is just one of those things that is creating a lot of havoc in our country, and we just need to be talking about it and learning about tools to help save more lives in this process as we point them to Jesus through Celebrate Recovery. But Lou, that's a long list of things, and I love your heart in that. Of course, you're so passionate. Anybody that knows Lou, if you're listening, yeah, I know Lou. I know his heart. You do a lot, and I love your passion. You truly do mean that when you say it's an honor to do this. But man, give us an idea. Why in the world do you have that list of things that you do to reach people, especially in the opioid arena? Give us a little glimpse of where does that come from, Lou? Why are you doing this?
It's kind of all upside down, because I was an early casualty of and contributor to the opioid epidemic in West Virginia. While I believed in God and had reverence for him, he was nowhere in the equation of my life. And when I went into the practice of medicine as a family doctor in small town West Virginia, I have an addictive personality, and I was a workaholic. I can actually remember, and I thought about that today, when I was in college, my dad died. And I had trouble with grief, and I threw myself into work, and I thought, well, there's no better work than trying to be a doctor, trying to get in to graduate college with good grades and get the recommendations, then go to medical school, and then get into a residency, and then get into practice. So I really, in dealing with the grief of my father's death, I threw myself into work. But I arrived in West Virginia as a small-town family doctor, and very quickly I wanted to fix everybody and make everybody happy. I came to understand working my step study the first time what codependency was, and I struggled a lot with it. You know, I could say no to no one. I said yes to every patient who wanted to see me, work ungodly hours. And it was at that time that opiates were being promoted. Mm. Pharmaceutical reps were bringing opiates out, promoting it, giving us samples in our offices. And in dealing with all the stresses and strains of practice, I had those samples. And I thought it was never going to cause me a problem. So I began to sample my own samples. The drugs in a doctor's closet are not for the doctor's personal use. But I didn't think the rules applied to me. In addition, so I developed an addiction to hydrocodone, one of the earliest opiates that came out. We were told that if you had legitimate pain, these drugs were not addictive. You could safely prescribe them, particularly when the long-acting agents came out, OxyContin and a whole bunch of other things along those lines. The steady blood level that those amazing drugs achieved did not contribute to addiction. Of course, I prescribed a lot of opiates according to standard of care to a lot of patients. And I found that as my practice went on, my addiction grew and my patients' problems grew. But fortunately, I kind of ran aground in all kinds of ways, and I got saved, and then I got sober. In fact, this is my 20-year celibate recovery coin.
Wow.
By the grace of God, I've been sober for and clean for 20 years. But then a month after the woman who led me to Christ, Donetta, and I got married, the feds raided my office. They found this paper trail fraudulent prescriptions and very sloppy practice of medicine. And then I was convicted of federal felonies of prescription fraud and insurance fraud. My medical license was revoked. Couldn't practice medicine. That's all I'd ever done. I mean, I never applied for a job. I'd gone from high school to college to medical school to residency to practice. So I went to Manpower, got a series of minimum wage day jobs, and I delivered pizza at night. I have to tell you, I love pizza delivery. You couldn't go wrong with pizza delivery. I mean, you drive up to the house, you got hot. I made pizza deliveries where I used to make house calls, actually as a doctor. You drive up to the house, you got hot food in the bag. The kids are at the door jumping up and down to screaming, "It's a pizza guy, this pizza guy." They're so excited. They give you money for the order and a tip and you drive away. But wow. But I knew that God had a bigger.
Much, much bigger, yeah. So, Lou, give me, because how many years ago was it? 20 years, right, of recovery, so maybe a little bit longer than that, kind of getting to that point. But what was the, give me a snapshot, can I get an understanding? And I want to kind of get into the process of what that healing looked like for you and how the tools that we're talking about in Celibate Recovery can be helpful. But where we are today in the magnitude of the problem and where we were then, can you give me a picture? I mean, you have a unique perspective as a doctor and being in the recovery process and being in service and helping people. Where give me a picture of the magnitude of where we are today with your experience.
I mean, we were prescribing a small amount of opiates. Then we began to, doctors began to prescribe more and more. And then it was like a freight train out of control, where the impact was not seen and massive amounts of opiates were being prescribed to people. It's kind of like that container ship that hit that bridge in Baltimore. Once you decided it was a problem, you couldn't stop the thing. So there was a massive prescribing. You know, we thought that patients needed their pain treated. They didn't need to suffer in pain. And these drugs were amazingly effective. What wasn't seen was that the drugs had terrible side effects. Mm. And addiction was a huge problem. So the process goes massive prescribing of opiates for pain control. And some of that pain was psychological pain, not physical pain, because it's hard to differentiate that. And then the medical profession determined that it was dangerous. Contracting that prescribing was then met with the easy availability of heroin. Mm. Heroin that we'd never seen before, and a new kind of heroin that was black tar heroin, very cheap, mass quantities from outside the country. And it was, the distribution system was almost like pizza delivery. You could call up and get heroin delivered to your house. unconscionable stuff going on. And then as opiates, as heroin, kind of contracted some, at least in West Virginia and elsewhere, we've seen methamphetamine take over. And meth is a stimulant, not an opiate. And that was even more potent than a stimulator of dopamine. Coming off of methamphetamine is really hard. And then this fentanyl, the stuff that we have now, and then analogs of fentanyl, so much more potent than the original opiate prescriptions, far more potent than heroin. And folks are dying from fentanyl overdoses. And the problem is, and there's many problems, but it is admixtured into other drugs. People think they're smoking marijuana and they're getting fentanyl. They think they're getting cocaine or methamphetamine and they're getting fentanyl. I mean, it's intentional because it is so addictive. It's a strategic plan by dealers to deal with that issue. And then people also get poisoned by it. They think they're taking something else. Certainly people get addicted to fentanyl, but others think they're using something else. They never intend to use fentanyl. They get a fentanyl and then they overdose and die.
Yeah. So, you kind of got to that question. It's like, you know, if fentanyl is so lethal, why do people use it? But it sounds like what you're saying for our listeners, I think this is just an important point. They are trying to, you know, I guess their initial heart is not in that. They're not trying to kill because they're trying to generate business, get you addicted. But sometimes they screw that up and they put too much in there and people overdose from that. Even in you mentioned like smoking marijuana, they may not know it's laced with fentanyl, that they're actually overdosing in those scenarios as well.
Yeah, and that's absolutely the case. And they're always going to be able to create customers.
Yeah.
Even if some of their customers die off inadvertently or purposefully in using fentanyl. But it is so profoundly addictive. And again, as I say, I never intended to be an addict. I just intended to deal with my hurts, habits, and hangups. And it wasn't getting high. It was just keeping from being sick. Mm. And I was dope sick if I didn't take 40 hydrocodone a day. But with fentanyl, you need even more, and you get even more dope sick. So with opiates, you can take them once or twice a day. Heroin, you can use once or twice a day and get by. But fentanyl, 2, 3, 4, or 5 times a day, just to stay even. Mm. So it keeps the customer coming back, even if they do fatally overdose.
Wow.
And so people, it's become a drug of choice for some people, and then inadvertent poisoning on the other. We lost 112,000 Americans to drug overdoses, inadvertent or in the course of using fentanyl. I mean, that's twice as many as we lost in the 9 years of the Vietnam War. Mm. We during the 20 years of the Iraq-Afghanistan War, we lost 350 soldiers a year. That's compared to 112,000.
Wow. Well, and Lou, what's interesting, those are staggering numbers. And I think to me, you said something so important and all that really hit me that I really want our listeners to take in, that these are not necessarily people who are deep in addictions, right? This can be our kids. It can be our teenagers that are just struggling with general hurt, and they're reaching for something just to numb the pain, and getting pulled into this real vicious cycle of inadvertently being laced with, not inadvertently by the dealers, but inadvertently taking something in they don't know they're taking in, and we're losing people. People are dying that are just hurting, right? They're trying to find, just like you said, I was trying to find healing from my hurts, hangups, and habits. You weren't trying to become an addict. You were just trying to deal with the pain. And that's something to just kind of sit in my heart and in our body, that's a big deal. That means that could be our kids. It could be our family, our neighbors, the people sitting in the pews next to us that are good people, just finding himself in some bad space.
I mean, the first foray into illicit drug use is not supposed to be able to kill you, but that's what we're seeing. So a young person or an older person just trying to deal with life and trying a new drug, trying drug use as a way of coping, can die. I mean, that's all upside down. In my day, it was alcohol and marijuana, and that's not going to kill you in the short order. But now, someone thinks they're taking a simple drug of some sort, and they get fentanyl and they die. I got to be on Anderson Cooper by the amazing, and I was with parents who'd lost their teenage children and young adults to fentanyl, from fentanyl poisoning, inadvertently taking fentanyl, not intending.
Right. Wow. Well, and yeah, if you missed that, but we got a link somewhere of that CNN interview with Lou and who was it? It was Anderson?
Anderson Cooper and Anderson. CNN.
Yeah. So, man, I love your heart. I love your wisdom. I know there's light bulbs going off in my head. I know people are listening going, wow, I didn't know that. And that's what we're trying to do through this trying to be ambassadors in this initiative, is we're trying to get the word out to educate people. But so some good stuff you're sharing. I appreciate your vulnerability about your own story, and you've always been so vulnerable. I've heard your full-blown testimony. It's a powerful story. But so, man, you were trying to face the hurt, became an addict. How does Celebrate Recovery, when did Celebrate Recovery enter the equation? And was that a slow process? Were you kind of slow to, I don't know about this? Or what point did you jump into Celebrate Recovery and face those hurts that you're talking about that led to addictions?
Well, it goes back to, I was pretty desperate. My office staff pulled an intervention on me. And I realized I had a problem. I got saved. By the grace of God, I was able to get clean and sober. And I was living a good life, although a federal felony took out my medical license and put me into other lines of work. But 5 years of sobriety, I began to work at a homeless shelter and recovery center. And Celebrate Recovery was a big part of that ministry. So I have 5 years clean and sober. Do I need recovery? But at the residents, the people that we were helping take care of were going to CR. I got involved and checked it out. And I came to understand that, yeah, my onion peels like it's addiction on the outside. It's codependency, deeper anxiety, and selfishness. That's kind of how my onion peels. And that's what I learned from my first step study in Celebrate Recovery. And then I became a dyed-in-the-wool CR person. Mm. I saw the value of it and how it can help people look at their deeper struggles, and with Christ as a solution for all those problems. So, CR all the way. I just see it impact so many lives. And we see, of course, you do too, miracles, how Christ can turn the lives around. And God never wastes a hurt. You know, people's greatest shame is now their greatest ministry. Mm. You know, it's incredible. Makes no sense in the natural, but it certainly does in the kingdom. So that's where CR is for me. And with opiates, you know, I want to continue to improve our community and deal with the struggles we have in West Virginia with Christ as a solution. We have a terrible overdose death rate, 3 times the national average. I mean, patients that I took care of as little kids are now in the cemetery. And families that I cared for in the 46 years that I've been in West Virginia are struggling with the impact of the opiates and then subsequent problems. So.
Wow. That's a lot to take in, man. It's a lot of data and really hard to, it just hits your heart just thinking about, I mean, I'm thinking about you caring for those kids and now they're in the cemetery. That's a big statement that we can't just brush by. But Lou, I want to take a quick break here, man. When I come back, I want to continue the conversation with my brother. Brings a lot of wisdom, a lot of insight, a lot of personal experience, professionally and personally in ministry, just his own recovery journey. And talking to Lou about opioids and what we can do. When we come back, we'll get into that a little bit. What does that look like and how can we be a part of that healing process? Through Celebrate Recovery and getting the word about that. Stick with me and I'll be right back. Hey, friends, if you'd like to know more about the opioid epidemic and how you can get involved at all of our in-person training conferences, we have people there that are there to talk about it, and they've got a QR code and a way for you to sign up so that you can take part in that. We'd love to see this in every church. So come visit us at the table at the local training conferences. You can find a full list on CelebrateRecovery.com. We hope to see you there, and maybe you can join us in this mission to become an opioid ambassador. Welcome back. Talking with Lou, right before we went to the break, you were throwing out just some, three times the rate there in West Virginia, and just the impact that's having there. But it's really a global thing now, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's all over the world. Certainly worse in North America because we prescribed so many opiates back in the 90s and the first decade of this century in an attempt to control people's pain and suffer the consequences of that. But it is a global issue, and we need an opiate ambassador in every CR, heck, in every church. I saw a statistic. If the average church in America has 200 people and 65% attendance on a Sunday, that means there's 130 people there. There's 18 people struggling with addiction and only one person getting help. Mm. That mind blows. You know, the church, I call CR the ER, Celebrate Recovery is the emergency room. It's a place where people with struggles, particularly substance use disorder, but all the other struggles too, can get help, because sometimes they don't think the church is necessarily the place they can go for help. But so we have a lot of people in the pews of church who are not getting help for their problems. And the other thing, you know, we see this catastrophic number of people dying, 112,000. There was a survey nationally. It says 140 million Americans, 140, a third of our population, 140 million Americans know someone who died from an overdose. Mm. And 40 million were seriously emotionally impacted by it. That's huge impact in our nation. But I guess I want to change the narrative a little bit here, and I want to give hope, because the fact of the matter is 75% of people who have substance use disorder will make it. 75% survival rate, but we have to look long term, 7 to 10 years, and people have to be afforded a whole lot of care, meeting them where they are. But you know, that's better than cancer and heart disease, 75% survival rate. But again, we think it's one and done. We think that you get sober and you never relapse, or you're not supposed to relapse. You know, it isn't, it's optional. You know, you don't have to relapse, but people do.
Right.
And they just can't be discouraged, because there's overwhelming hope, and all the hope is in Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So obviously, Lou, we have a great resource here in Celebrate Recovery to help people face those hurts so that they don't have to turn to those numbing agents or coping strategies. But what's some practical things? Obviously, we're pointing them to Jesus Christ using the tool Celebrate Recovery. What's some practical things that the team has been working on to educate and get the word out about this issue? What are you guys doing?
We'd like to have an opiate ambassador in every CR, to be a point of contact, to be a resource person, to be able to speak for the problem that exists. Again, only a third of people who come to Celebrate Recovery have substance use or addiction issues. The other two-thirds maybe don't have any familiarity about it, and they need to learn about it. The opiate ambassador can talk about Narcan, can train in Narcan, because everyone needs to have Narcan, because you never know when you're going to encounter someone who has had an overdose.
Yeah. So tell me, I want to assume none of our listeners know what Narcan is. What is Narcan, just briefly, just to educate our listeners?
Sure. Narcan is a reversal agent for opiates. In general, what opiates do is they relieve pain, but they can be so potent that they suppress breathing, respiration. They go to the brain and shut down the basic, that's what an overdose is, shutting down breathing mechanism in the body. And Narcan reverses that opiate, powerfully so. All of a sudden, that person wakes up. It's called a Lazarus drug, because a person is blue and cold, and maybe pulseless and not breathing, and you give them Narcan, and they come back to life. It's a temporary fix. I mean, they still need, you need to call 911, need to get emergency medical care, and that person needs to be monitored. But it's a chance at life. And as I said on the Anderson Cooper thing, you know, we reverse overdoses to keep them alive until they can develop a relationship with Christ. And until they have another chance to work their recovery from their hurts, habits, and hang-ups. So that's one thing that an opiate champion can do, is educate folks in CR about Narcan. I was surprised when I was at the summit last summer how many people did not know about opiates and did not know about Narcan. But again, people are dealing with their own struggles that may not be related to substance use disorder. The other thing that an opiate ambassador can do is just educate the attendees and the leaders, attend leaders meetings and educate about this whole alphabet soup of care that is out there, because there are all kinds of options for care for opiate addiction, alcohol addiction, substance use disorder care, but it can be confusing, and to bring clarity and give direction for folks who may be encountering folks who struggle.
Wow. So let's say, I want to be an opiate ambassador, like on educating the meetings. Do I need to go take a class? How do I come up with the content to educate my church and my ministry on what this is all about? What do I need to do? How do I get this information?
It's a matter of just absorbing it over a period of time and learning about it, being open to learning. There's no formal class. Really, an opiate ambassador just has to have a heart, a heart to care, and then everything else can be added from there. You know, you keep your eyes open, you're active in your community, learn where the resources are, and point people toward those resources. And just be a listening ear to folks who are struggling, particularly even for family members who don't know what to do with their loved one who may be struggling with opiates or other substance use problems. And we don't want to forget alcohol. Alcohol is still far and away the worst agent out there. We have a lot of focus on fentanyl and overdoses, because alcohol doesn't kill people in short order like fentanyl can, but it still is the most addictive agent out there. And we don't want to forget that. People need help with that too. And so,
The opiate ambassador. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
The opiate ambassador would have all those resources at their fingertips.
Yeah, that's good. Well, and the cool thing is the solution, whether it's alcohol or opiates or whatever, meth, I mean, the solution is the same, right? So the process can be, you know, it be different in length. And the healing journey, I always think about this, that God loves us, in this healing journey is unique to us individually, depending on what we need and His timing. And so it's trusting Him in that process. But He's a central ingredient in that, to invite Him into that with the beautiful community around us, which I love. So Lou, I love your story, man, and we just kind of barely did a drive-by on this, on your story, but what is, if somebody's struggling, because it feels hopeless that, you know, I'm always going to be addicted to this, and it's ever going to get better, I'm just one of those people that's never going to find recovery, what's the benefits for Lou being on the other side of this, and what's some encouragement that you would give to somebody that might be in the middle of this, or maybe it's a family member that's listening that has a family member that's struggling? What's some words that you would give in that space, man?
It's a matter of living one day at a time, doing the next right thing. If you can focus on that, then all things are surmountable. And it's how do you achieve recovery? You do it like you eat an elephant, one bite at a time. You know, you can't take it all on at once. And I think you can have expectations of long-term sobriety, but you need to just expect to be sober today. Just expect not to use drugs today, not enable a loved one today, you know, help people who do have to experience the consequences of their actions to learn, allow people to learn. But again, the overwhelming hope that is out there for these problems, was a long-term process.
Yeah.
And talking about feelings is key. I love Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers says, if it's human, it's mentionable. If it's mentionable, it's manageable. So that means that if you have a human issue and you talk about it, boy, it makes it easier. And if you share with another human being, I mean, that's scriptural, certainly, share with another human being, that helps you handle those struggles. But we don't like to talk. We don't like to ask for help. We don't like to admit our struggles. It's just human nature. But there's great hope there.
Yeah.
That's a beauty of story.
Yeah.
Sharing in the same place.
Amen. Amen. Well, I love your story, and I love what you're doing, and I hope our encourage. I love that quote by Mr. Rogers. That's really cool. Just creating space, trusting the process, literally one moment at a time, and don't focus on the outcome. Focus on the source of the outcome, and God will take care of the rest. And that's what we do in Celebrate Recovery. But just again, another reminder. Everything Lou is talking about, we've at our training conferences. We've got, I think, four more coming up. I think the next one is in Maryland, and then Florida, and then we've got one in St. Louis, and then I think there's another one in Indiana. I think so. Every one of those will have some representatives, ambassadors for the opiate initiative to help people. Just be educated on this so you can learn how to help. And Lou, you know, this was real, as we're wrapping up here, this happened last week. We had a guy who we had to apply Narcan to. He was overdosing and had walked out and actually had on his phone call 911 because he couldn't even talk, but he knew he was feeling it. And really, really scary thing, but I was so grateful that we had Narcan on site to be able to revive him and get him to the medical care that he needed. But it's a real thing, and I'm grateful for you and all the ambassadors, opioid ambassadors, doing the work that you're doing, man. I appreciate you and appreciate most of all who you are in Christ. You're a good man. I love you, brother.
Thank you, Ronnie. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Yeah, I know it's been beneficial for our listeners, but I hope that this has been helpful for everyone. This is an important topic, and we'll have more conversations around this with other folks that are doing this great ambassador role through the opioid ambassador role. But if you'd like more information about this, or you want to find a group to find that healing, to find the source through Jesus Christ and this great tool we call Celebrate Recovery, you can go to CelebrateRecovery.com and find a group. Just go to the group locator, type in your city, state, or your zip code, and you can find groups around you. And all you got to do is show up, and you'll have loving people that will meet you at the door. Don't face this alone. That's the key in this. But hey, thanks for being with us today. I pray that you'll join me next time. Until then, God bless.